Sports, and we want to get right to it, right out of the gate as we jump on board the G&M Family Market phone line to talk some Red Sox with our friend Alex Speer of the Boston Globe. Alex, good afternoon.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us today. And, well, let's get right to the Red Sox and zoom right ahead to postseason. We'll just assume everything will go fine for the next couple of weeks. And that thing that plagued the team early in the season, the inconsistent rotation, has certainly turned itself around. And as you wrote on the BostonGlobe.com site, they're looking pretty good up against other postseason contenders.
Well, it's funny because if you think back to the beginning of the season, there was this considerable question about whether or not the Red Sox had erred horribly in their failure to acquire a number two starter for the beginning of the season. And if you look at just second half, things like second half wins above replacement on FanGraphs, as well as ERA, the Red Sox, you know, Porcello leads the American League, or at least American League contenders, actually the entire American League, in wins above replacement in the second half. And Price is second among contending pitchers. So that's a pretty good one, too, as it stands. And in fact, if you draw it out a little further to seeing the 1-4 in the Red Sox rotation, they are the only team in the American League that has three starters that would presumably be in their postseason rotation who have sub-3 ERAs in the second half. They are one of two rotations, along with the Tigers, that have among contenders that has four starters with sub-4 ERAs when you add in Drew Pomeranz. So all things considered, the Red Sox rotation looks pretty ready for to be able to match up well. That's no guarantee, of course, but to match up well against just about any of the other contenders in the potential postseason series.
Interesting, too, when you mentioned the Tigers and the two guys with the sub-3 ERAs, probably not the two people most would have expected.
Well, you'd probably expect Justin Verlander, but Matt Boyd would probably be a little bit more of a stretch. But look at those babies, you know, those baby members of their rotation. They're really doing something when you add in guys like Michael Fulmer and Daniel Norris, who was down. And I saw him pitching for AAA Toledo this year, and he was overpowering against the Paw Sox at the time. But theirs is a different rotation, but it's been pretty intriguing, and I think that there's good reason to think that the Tigers have a pretty decent shot at sneaking in to the postseason amidst this AL East battle royale.
So when you take a look at the numbers, too, do our gut feelings, are they borne out by the numbers that the big concern for this team going forward is that bullpen?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, it's if you look at their number, the bullpen's numbers in September, the answer would be no. They have a sub-1 ERA as a team out of the bullpen this month, and their only relief loss came when Craig Kimbrel was on the mound. You would certainly put Kimbrel in the asset rather than the liability category when it comes to the bullpen. But so, you know, I think nonetheless, over the broader scope of the year, especially in the second half of the season, you know, a lot of the Red Sox have a lot more losses that have come out of their bullpen than most other contenders. So, sure, you would say that is a concern. Their bullpen looks a lot different when they have Koji Uehara as a full inning, eighth inning guy, which in turn permits them to use Brad Ziegler as a very intriguing matchup weapon in different stages of the game. But I think that it's fair to say that at the very least, the bullpen is the most ill-defined part of the Red Sox roster.
We're talking with Alex Speer of the Boston Globe. All season long, everybody out there has been questioning the moves of John Farrell, but there's one that can't be questioned when you look at the success that it's led to, and that's the move of Dustin Pedroia to the leadoff spot.
Yeah, that's paid some interesting dividends, I suppose. Somewhat surprising of course, early in his career, when you think back to like 2008, 2009, 2010, there was this idea that Pedroia was uncomfortable in the leadoff spot. He didn't perform as well in those instances where he was briefly moved into that role. Well, he happens to be putting together what is as good a performance, at least by batting average, as anyone has ever seen from the leadoff run from the leadoff spot. Among all players who have ever had 100 or more plate appearances in a season as a leadoff hitter, his 449 average in that role would be the best that I can find dating back to at least 1913. And there's not a close second. Like, there's I think that Bobby Higginson 20 years ago hit like 420 in that role. But what Pedroia is doing there, I don't think that it is unrelated to the fact that the Red Sox are 19-10 since he did take over that leadoff spot.
And doing it all, as you pointed out in the Globe yesterday, by simply foregoing batting practice.
Yeah, it's interesting. He's figured out a way of kind of regulating his workload, of getting into as many games as possible, but doing as efficient and little work, pregame work, as possible. So, you know, he's still working behind the scenes, but, you know, he's putting into question this longstanding baseball institution. And he's not the only one. The Cubs, for instance, last year, when they were an offensive juggernaut in the second half, largely ditched batting practice. And I do think that there can be questions at times about whether or not there's terrific value in going out and facing 60-mile-an-hour slop. I can understand that there is kind of hardwired muscle memory, and you feel you're able to kind of lock in your swing mechanics. But especially at the latter stages of the season, Xander Bogaerts was talking to me about this yesterday, you know your swing, you feel your swing, you usually don't really need that much batting practice in order to get it back.
And Alex, before we let you go, speaking of historic numbers, the offense continues to impress. Now, Hanley Ramirez is very close to becoming the third member of the team with 100 RBIs. Now, I remember the 77 team had an awful lot of home runs, awful lot of guys with big RBI numbers, but it feels like it's been a while since they've had three guys reach that level.
You know, I haven't looked up that specific trait of the team. It's hard for me to think that the 2003-2004 teams didn't have at least three guys who hit that plateau. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but they had some awfully productive members in the middle of those orders. Even the 2011 team, I would wonder whether or not they hit the mark, because they had Ellsbury, I believe, reaching 100 RBIs along with Gonzalez and Ortiz that year. But, you know, that does little to diminish the rarity of the event and the fact that, you know, if you're looking at the Red Sox, certainly 1 through 5, I mean, holy smokes, that's a pretty formidable thing for an opposing team to have to think about counteracting.
Our crack research staff tells us 2003 they matched that total.
Again, not surprising, given that was the 961 run team that represented the largest offensive output since those crazy 1950 teams that were surely playing with a juice ball.
And also, guys, Kevin Millar only fell 4 short of the 100 mark that season.
Wow.
And every one of those RBIs was achieved directly down the left field line.
Exactly. Hey, Alex, we appreciate you making time for us at your busy schedule this afternoon. Thanks for checking in. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. That's